On this episode of The Midwife's Cauldron, we are delving into Rachel Reid's new book, Reclaiming Childbirth as a Rite of Passage. We look into the book, how it was written, how she came up with the concept, and we delve into some of the chapters. You may be tempted to think that we're just reviewing a book here, but this isn't any ordinary book. This is Rachel Reid's book. And you know that you've come to the right place because you're in the cauldron for some fun, facts, and laughter, as always. So join us as today's guest is not the host, Rachel Reid. I'm Katie James, and this is the Midwives Cauldron Podcast. Each episode, I'm joined by my incredible co-host, Dr. Rachel Reid. Listen in as we hubble, bubble, toil and trouble our way through aspects of womanhood, midwifery, birth and lactation. So go on, subscribe now, and hear us on your favourite podcast host. Anyway, right. Welcome to the podcast, Rachel Reid. Sorry, Dr. Rachel Reid, who I am interviewing today, not as my co-host, but as Dr. Rachel Reid, author and blog writer and publisher of a brand new book. Rachel, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me, Katie, and thank you for wearing lipstick and looking so fabulous.
Well, it's a celebration.
While I sit here sweating in a bra.
Yep, I'm glad that you are sitting there sweating in your bra with your towel behind your back. It is a lovely image, drinking your sludgy perimenopausal drink. But it's in a crystal glass, folks. It is very posh. Ah, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. So, Rachel, we have been waiting for this book for a long time. Well, I particularly have, and I'm very lucky that I have been able to read it already. This book is a passion piece of yours that has been created for quite a while now, for the last few years. And I think it'd be really nice to just tell us where you got this idea. Yep, we're 3 minutes in and I already need to stop to just to let you know that, well, this happened and I can't put it as a blooper because it happens again at the end and, well, just listen and see.
Hang on, do I need to tell Reedy to stop banging about on the deck out there?
I can't hear it, luckily. I could just see him walking past.
He's going past, like, you know, it reminds me of, who was it again? Bring Me Sunshine.
Oh.
Morecambe and Wise. Hang on. It is Morecambe and Wise.
I know, I'm laughing at
you. Can you remember when they used to come past in the background with his coat on, like... mopping things.
Bring me sunshine.
Anyway, sorry, complete digress. You were saying?
Brilliant. That was a nice flow as well, and you've just well interrupted that. Thanks. All right, Dr. Rachel Reid, can we start back at the beginning? Because I know that this book has come from years of thinking about it and resisting it and eventually writing this, which for me is such a special, it was a special book to read, not only because it's from you, but actually just how you have this ability to write and put messages and pictures into words. And can you just take us back to where this came from?
All right. So I feel like this, I'm going to not, you know, tell you my entire life story because you'd be very bored. So this really kind of started with my PhD in that, you know, the whole stages of labor was a framework that I was thinking inside, having been a midwife, kind of brought up stages of labor, all that kind of stuff. So when I set out to do my PhD, I was initially looking at, I can't remember the exact title, it was something along the lines of midwifery practice during the second stage of labor. Mm-hmm. So I was very much stage of labor, yeah? So what I wanted to do was look at the practices that midwives did and how, you know, how women experienced them during the second stage of labor. So a PhD isn't just about doing a bit of research. It actually changes the way you think because your brain gets so kind of stretched. So you end up exploring things, like being able to think more deeply. I can't really put it into words, but I think anybody who's had their brain stretched to that capacity will get where I'm coming from. And you just start to question everything and look at things critically and what is underlying everything rather than, you know, just taking everything at surface level, because you have to do that to do a PhD. So long story short, my PhD went from what do midwives do in the second stage of labor to ending up 6 years later being titled Midwifery Practice During Birth, Rites of Passage and Rites of Protection. Mm-hmm. So I'd done this full kind of immersion into, all right, clinical, what do midwives do? Where do they put their hands? You know, directed pushing, blah, blah, blah. And then headed into, whoa, there's something much deeper underpinning what it is we do and how women experience that and how it interacts with women's experience. And then headed into ritual theory and social anthropologists and all of that stuff. And anyway, came out with this thesis that was from midwives' perspectives, but also women's perspectives around what was happening during the entire birth process, what midwives are doing and how women experienced it. And it was all just about physiological birth. So that's all I looked at, because most research combines, you know, just general populations of women having babies, which is a lot of intervention. And I really wanted to go, no, what happens with just a physiological birth and how do the interactions and actions of midwives influence that experience for women? And why do midwives do the things they do or not do the things? So that was my PhD in a nutshell. And then I put it, finished it, and you never want to see it again when you've done a PhD, ever.
I remember you so saying I presented that.
Presented it, put it into that repository or suppository, as I used to call it, the research suppository area, and then just left it. Had to do two publications out of it in proper journals, you know, to be legit.
Yeah.
And then thought, I've done it. That's it. I'm not doing it again.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I know. And I kept getting asked, oh, are you going to write a book about this? And people were actually reading my thesis, which is unusual because basically theses are really, really boring.
And long.
I'm sure they didn't read the methods.
Skip to the end.
Right. So people say, when are you writing a book? And I say, I'm not writing a book. Go and read my thesis. It's freely available. You can skip the methods chapter. And I kept getting asked, kept getting invited to conferences to talk about it. And I'm like, well, can I talk about something else? Because I'm really over. So I actually tried to get away from it for a couple of years. and it just kept coming up. And it also changed how I looked at teaching. And this framework of looking at birth not as stages of labor and just a physical thing of a, you know, cervix opening, a baby coming out, as something much more complex than that, then just started to infiltrate the way that I taught, the way that because I was a midwife at the time, the way that I provided care for women. So that went on for a number of years. And I still wasn't going to write a book. And then I did the Four Seasons Journey with Jane, which is not so, like, it's really not something that I would normally do.
This was a huge surprise for me because I had just left, I don't know, maybe it was a couple of years after I had left the Sunshine Coast, and we'd obviously seen each other probably once a week or so at that point. And then I'd gone to Melbourne and you'd been very much in the research world. I don't know, you were one person, and then all of a sudden you start on this journey and you say to me, I'm going to do this year-long journey with Jane Hardwick Collins. And I'm like, what? I can remember my mouth falling open going, huh? Rachel doing this, looking at all of these sort of more spiritual aspects of ourselves. And I was gobsmacked.
And it was a massive challenge for me. So I am, and I, you know, I've kind of come full circle now, which I kind of talk about. You know, I'm a thinker. The midwife thinking wasn't named accidentally. You know, I didn't really think much about it, but when I look back, it's obviously going to be midwife thinking. This is what I do. I probably do too much is thinking. You know, I'd like to shut my mind up sometimes. So to immerse myself, I'd done this whole ritual rites of passage from this really kind of theoretical thinking and applying it into midwifery practice and clinical kind of perspective. And then I went on this journey where we really explored rites of passage more from a kind of really experiential, like, what were my rites of passage? How did they influence who I am as a midwife? How have they influenced, you know, how my life's unfolded, what my, you know, who I am? And, you know, we were forced to look at stuff like that, you know, which is challenging for me because I'm kind of really don't like kind of sharing. That doesn't align with kind of who I was. So I really resisted it, but it was a huge learning curve. And so I think I got more out of that in terms of understanding me and aspects of me that I don't think I would have understood in any other way. And it gave me this real experience of ritual, not necessarily around birth, but ritual in general and its application and rites of passage. I just had this whole other learning that then kind of fitted together. And part of this Four Seasons journey was we did a solo journey where we went up a mountain and there was loads of us and it was really stressful to be around, you know, a big group of women for a long period of time. You're laughing because you know, I can't even cope with being in the tea room for too long. And it was 10 days. So we had all these days together.
10 days.
Around a campfire.
It's like your idea of a nightmare, to be honest, really.
I know.
I was so gobsmacked that you were going to do this.
Bloody freezing.
Which makes it that makes you even happier, Rachel. I know it does.
I have flashbacks to the cold. Anyway, part of it was a 3-day bit in the middle of this where you went off and you camped for 3 days by yourself in the forest with your little. And I really loved that. I was ready for it as well by the time it came around.
I think that's the point of the fact that it's 10 days, so that everyone just wants to be completely alone because it's been way too much with too many people.
Well, the 10 days was how many days either side. So you did a few days either side, the 3 days, and you came back for a few days. And I can't do the maths, but anyway. But it was the 3 days away. And I chose, and the mountain had just had a fire come through. So the bit that I chose to spend my solo time on was like all ash with a few little trees up here and there. And I spent 3 days. I didn't take a book. Honestly, even though I was very tempted. So I just had to sit for 3 days and nights listening to my head not shut up. So, you know, I didn't get that real. I didn't get that peace. It was just constant. So I just kind of sat underneath that and let my brain run off in all kinds of directions. Built a fire on the last night and just thought about. So we were supposed to be open to a vision. But anyway, this book came to me then. And I realized that I did actually need to write this book.
So you're saying you were meant to be open to a vision, but one didn't come to me, but then I realized I needed to write a book. Isn't that your vision?
Well, it wasn't like anybody didn't go, whoa, like a big spirit.
What you imagine, like a big old, I don't know, what do you call it? Anthropus. What do you call it when a spirit appears?
Not one of those.
Yeah, it wasn't one of those. Whatever the word is, it wasn't one of those. Good, go on.
We'll be right back.
I just wanted to pop into your luggles and tell you about my brand spanking new podcast, The Feeding Couch. This podcast ain't just designed with pregnant women or new parents in mind, but also for all of us working in the space of birth work. This is the podcast where I hand the mic over to a different mum, dad, parent, or even grandparent to take us on their feeding journey. Every story matters. It's often through hearing others' experiences where we find our own inner knowledge, strength, and courage. Listen in to hear the stories told of triumph, challenge, heartwarming, tear-jerking, fist-pumping, and how we each deal with our venture into this new world emotionally, socially, and physically. Whether you're a student, a newbie midwife, doula, lactation exam prepper, or just hungry for more knowledge, these stories will also give you a backstage pass to the Global Lactation Clinic. Whether you're pregnant and seeking information or supporting those on their journey, I can't wait to see you on the couch with me soon. Oh, and a little favour, your reviews on Apple Podcasts mean the world. They're like magic beans that help spread the podcast out for those who need to hear it. Let's make this something amazing together.
Right, so then I made the decision, all right, I will actually write this book that I said I wouldn't write because I actually need to write this book. I need to combine all of this stuff into a book. Anyway, then I decided, yeah, I'm not going to do it now, though. So this is after, you know, after all of that.
You still resisted.
No, I didn't have time. I was really busy. I didn't have time. Anyway, the opportunity to write the book Why Induction Matters came up, like within month or so of me coming back from that chin. And it was just like, oh, okay, so here's an opportunity to write a book, to learn how to, you know, because I've written journal articles, I've written blogs, I've written a chapter in a book. I haven't written a book apart from a thesis, which is not a book. And it was like, oh, okay, I'm now being gifted this opportunity to write a book.
Yeah.
And to go through that process, which I did. And then funnily enough, people stopped asking me to talk about rites of passage and started asking me to talk about bloody induction.
Yeah. Your favorite. Well, there you go. There's your lesson. Is that why you decided to write this book? Because you went, I don't want to talk about induction anymore.
I didn't want to write.
Write. So, and now you're known for it. You're the queen of induction.
Well, I did want to write that because I wanted to learn how to write a book. So then I'd written a book. So I'm like, okay, now I have to actually write this book. And I took 3 months long service leave to really get it started. Yeah, spent time writing it. And now it's just about to be published. So by the time this goes out, it'll be published. And it really is my PhD, all the stuff that I rabble on about here in terms of physiological birth. So it's like the alternative to stages of labor. It's a much deeper, more holistic framework for understanding birth and understanding what care providers bring into the birth experience. So it's physiology, sociology, cultural stuff, which is why, you know, I got Anna Day to design the cover and she's done a fantastic job. And I wanted it to be, yes, it's about kind of rites of passage, which often conjures up kind of real spiritual woo for people. But it's actually about more than that. It's also the science and the physiology. So I wanted that to come out in the cover. And I think that's what Anna did.
Anna is, just for anyone who doesn't know, and we will link Anna in the show notes, Anna is who has basically painted Rachel's entire skin with the most beautiful tattoos. For me, reading your book, and I think absolutely you've weaved a huge amount in there. What I particularly like, and probably something that you think is so simple, but you've weaved this story through there. So you've weaved the story of Eve. Is she called Eve?
Yep.
I'll cut that bit. You've weaved the story of... Good memory.
You haven't even fucking read it.
I have fucking read it. Her name was at the beginning. I'm at the end. So, you know, you've weaved this story in there that is just so beautiful. And so you get, like with each chapter, this other story within the book, within the story almost. And it just, I don't know, it's just so lovely because it really goes back to both, we could be going back to the time of, you know, Eve in terms of religion or whatever you want to think, but it can also be Eve from 2021 or whenever, of just being in her own space. And I don't know, this, it seems to bring together everything you've said in that chapter, and it's simple, but it's beautiful and it's so lovely. And also the quotes that go throughout it I find really powerful. So it's this book is something that just gives a greater understanding of us as women and the struggles that we face and the history of that and where it's come from. But it also just goes through, like you say, this rite of passage. So it's going through this entire journey of what happens to us as women through pregnancy, through birth, and through those, I'm going to say stages, but what I mean is those stages of differentiation throughout the birth and afterwards. And it just reframes how we look at things. For me, there were so many goosebump moments. There were so many moments where I wanted to shout and scream and say, this textbook should be in every bloody school. And this is what we should be teaching. Not alone, not just a midwifery school, but, you know, this should be taught in sex education classes. Why are we not talking about it in this way? This should be every medical degree. This should be the textbook that they have to read. And it was just bringing the science with also this huge depth of knowledge that us as midwives in particular have had for so long. And also, you know, this understanding and knowledge about working with women and seeing things and understanding the changes that might not necessarily have all the research, but then bringing in the research where it is needed.
Yeah. So I really struggled with this book in terms of structuring it, because I felt like I couldn't just launch into childbirth as a rite of passage without putting it into its context. Mm. So I ended up kind of going, okay. And that's where I ended up using the kind of concept of weaving, where you've got the warp, which is part one of the book, which is kind of, you know, those the threads that are vertical that you then weave through. So setting that up to then weave through the childbirth rite of passage, because if you don't understand the her story of birth and you don't understand the legacy and you don't understand how, and this is, you know, how childbirth fits into the other rites of passage and how it's influenced by our other rites of passage as women. And this is also for care providers, how your rites of passage influence how you approach women during birth and how your perceptions of birth and how you practice. So I wanted all of that up front, and then a chapter explaining really the concept of childbirth as a rite of passage. And then part two of the book is the WEF. And this is where we meet Eve. So I was trying to find a way to do the physiology of birth, which is actually pretty, I mean, I find it fascinating, but it's really dry if you try and write it down.
Yeah.
You know, when I teach it, I do a lot of actions. Yeah. Yeah. And we have a conversation to try and pull it out. But if you just write it down, it's like,
storytelling.
So I wanted to find a way to convey the physiology of each kind of phase of rite of passage. So I thought I'd use Eve as the blueprint to tell the story of the physiology, which had the potential to be the boring bit. So at the beginning of each chapter is the journey through the childbirth rite of passage, starting with preparation, separation, liminality, emergence, and integration. And for those four chapters, we follow Eve at the beginning of each chapter. And it is just, as you said, it's just the story of this woman who is preparing for birth and then birthing. It's her first baby. And it's the physiology, but also kind of what she's experiencing. And then that sets the scene to then talk about in the chapters, all right, so what are the rites of passage that support and promote what's happening for the woman? And what are the rites of protection that are aimed at protecting the woman and baby? But in our modern Western maternity culture, the rites of protection are very much kind of medicalized, not necessarily evidence-based, and often disrupt the birth process and protect the institution, not the woman. So there's that in each chapter. And then the final chapter, because I thought this is really important to include a chapter on medical birth rights, because although we've gone through four chapters looking at physiology and how to promote and support that, it's really important that we acknowledge that it's not about having a physiological birth, that physiology augments, you know, the hormones and things all work into that rite of passage. But the way a woman births her baby, she's still having a rite of passage, just as valuable as anybody else. As a woman who has an elective cesarean section is still having a childbirth rite of passage that is still teaching her about herself. That is, she's still going, you know, stretching herself, you know, in, beyond her own capacity and back again. That is still a really powerful, important experience. So the final chapter is, now that we understand physiology as a foundation, how can we adapt that for women who are not having a physiological birth, who do need rights of protection and medical rights of protection in some cases? How can we center them in their rite of passage? So I wanted to kind of add that chapter in because I felt it was important, because when I present on this, I often get people say, oh, well, I didn't have a physiological birth, so I didn't have a rite of passage. Like, yeah, you did.
Yeah.
You possibly, you know, you had a really powerful rite of passage, regardless of whether you saw it or acknowledged it. It's not about, you know, one particular way of birthing a baby.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that was really important to put in because, of course, you know, that's a huge amount of the population and a huge amount of people who will be, whether they are working within this field and have had their own births prior to working in this field, or they've had their own experiences. And it, you know, to, we need to be careful as people who work within this field to make sure that we see the whole process as a rite of passage. And I think that's what's come out of that, this book, that's what's so important. And it's validating that. And also it's a way of saying exactly what you said, regardless of how you've birthed, we know that there's a huge amount of trauma for so many women after they've birthed, to be able to acknowledge that in a way that works for those women is incredibly important. And also for some women, that's the right type of birth for them. That is what they felt safest. That is their choice. But it's a way of talking through really something that perhaps we've forgotten. And it's bringing in information from years ago. It's bringing in that information that maybe you got the opportunity to work with this midwife who maybe has retired now, and you picked up those tiny bits of nuggets of gold.
No, I knew we were going to have to get nuggets in there. We've had the goosebumps. Where's the nuggets?
This felt like it was, you know, for me, obviously there's a remembrance because I haven't been in, you know, in the birthing part of midwifery for a long time. And it was like this remembrance, this kind of like muscle memory was coming back every time I was reading a new chapter. And it was so brilliant. And of course, then I get onto the points where I feel very familiar with, but it was, I started having these flashbacks of these midwives that I had worked with who had been so important in my student career. And then as my career as a midwife, or an early midwife working within birth. And that's what it felt to me like reading this book was, when you just get those almost pinch yourself moments of, oh God, that's such a nugget of gold. I'm going to keep this. I'm going to remember it. And it's going to change my practice. And there was other bits where you just nod your head going, yes, yes, yes. And that's what I got from this book. It was marvelous.
Well, I actually got a lot from writing this book because I had to take my framework. And I really wanted to, so I wanted to look at, and I usually do this when I look at something, I look at history or her story of a thing. So for each part of the childbirth rite of passage, I was looking at what did we used to do as rites of protection? For example, birthing the placenta. Mm.
Oh God.
So I would start each section with, look, what used to happen? What did our ancestors do as a rite of passage or rite of protection for birthing the placenta, for example? And then what do we do now? How does what we do now reflect our culture? Because all of our practices, which are essentially rituals or rites during birth, reflect the culture that they arise out of. So what we do reflects our culture. So it's really interesting to then look historically and go, what was happening, for example, in the lying-in period in the Middle Ages? Mm. What were they doing? How did that promote and support physiology? Mm. How are we doing that differently or the same? You know, some things.
Yeah.
Stay the same and they just kind of change the placenta. I love the placenta information around where, the way the placenta is perceived and then how it's treated based on how it's perceived. Mm-hmm. Just is so variable, you know. For some cultures, the placenta is this really sacred, you know, companion of the baby, mm-hmm. and it's treated as such. Yeah. And in other cultures, it's seen as this like really evil potential killer that needs to be treated as a dangerous, you know, a dangerous entity when it's born. So it's just really interesting to see that, you know, what we do is so cultural, and that fits, you know, today. That's what we're doing, is what mm-hmm. we're seeing in practice. And we keep saying this, don't we, in the podcast, yeah. is not evidence-based.
Yeah.
It's culture-based.
Yeah.
It's not about research. It's about what is the cultural norm.
Totally.
And the cultural norms are what, or what is in, you know, reflect the culture and society that they are within. So if you just follow the thread of that cultural norm, you'll find what underlies it. And often what underlies our cultural norms in maternity care, in Western maternity care, is that the woman's body is dangerous and risky. And the way that we can mitigate that is use medicine and technology. That's yeah. often where the thread leads.
Absolutely. And culture is so difficult to change. Sometimes it doesn't need to, and it's wonderful, and it's got that power and strength behind it. But sometimes, you know, particularly in our Western culture, there is fear. Fear is like the number one thing that seems to go hand in hand with pregnancy. And it's that fear of the birth that just follows women throughout. And we've got this as the cultural norm. And so if you're starting with a basis of fear for birth, and then, of course, we've also got the fear of not being able to breastfeed. And we're battling that. No matter what the research says, it's difficult to make that change. It's a tricky one, but it brings it together. It gives us this deeper understanding.
And I think that, I mean, I actually wrote a section on fear, fear and danger and risk, because it's actually always been part of birth. It's always been part of the way that humans have approached birth, is with a real sense of what I think is reverence and respect for this huge physiological, emotional, spiritual experience that also comes with danger, because all powerful rites of passage have an element of danger. Mm-hmm. But it's what we see as dangerous that has shifted. So a lot of the rites of protection historically across pregnancy and birth have been around the risk as being coming from outside the woman, and that the woman needs protecting from her environment, from spirits in some cases that are wanting to do her harm. So it's about, you know, protecting her from the environment. And then that's shifted into, you know, that she is the risk, and that we need to be doing things in her environment and to her to mitigate the risks that come out of her body. So it's just been this absolute kind of flip of how we perceive risk in birth, which then changes how we practice. You know, we've gone from in the lying in period where they'd like, you know, block out any drafts or close windows and really try and protect the space from any evil spirits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now we have the lights on so that we can see to make sure that the woman's body's working properly, and that, you know, we've got our machines monitoring her body, and we've got people coming in the room to make sure that she's functioning effectively.
I really loved hearing about, reading about that. That was just such a great part of it. That was really interesting. And the way you talked about how, yes, it's like the external has now become the internal, and the woman herself has become kind of like the object as the outsiders that we're frightened of and we have to observe. Really, that was really such a great thing to read as well. Real good history lesson. I loved it.
Yeah, so women now preparing for birth, all of their fears center around whether or not they're good enough. Can they do it? Because their bodies won't work properly. What if I can't make enough milk? You know, what if I'm not good enough? What if I can't function properly?
Yeah.
It's not, oh, what if that, you know, I need to do this, otherwise that particular evil spirit might be able to come in and mess things up for me. Or, you know, it's shifted.
Yeah.
And some of those rituals and taboos and things have carried on. And I, you know, I can remember when I was having my babies, you weren't meant to have your pushchair or pram in the house until the baby was born. Mm. So, you know, people would have their, I can remember actually having mine in and somebody making a comment because I had the pram in the house ready, that you're meant to have it in someone else's house. Because if you had the pram in the house, it would attract evil spirits to take the baby, because you were making presumptions about your baby, you know, that it's going to live.
Keep it. It's like seeing the wedding dress by the groom the day before, or putting an umbrella up in the house. Those types of superstitions that live on. Don't walk under a ladder. It's all of those, isn't it? But it's that, don't Don't bring the Pratt. I'd never heard that one before, actually, until you told me about that.
Don't bring attention on yourself. And I actually wrote about couvades as well, which is something that traditionally fathers of the baby do in various cultures. It's like, it's fairly widespread in that it happens across a number of cultures where, so the father of the baby traditionally will enact the pregnancy. And when the woman's in labor, they'll actually act being in labor. And the idea is to draw the spirits to them away from the woman so that she's safe.
Because they're the one who's
giving birth. It's just like, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I loved reading that.
And that's why it took so long to do all that kind of research. Thank you, Sheila Kitzinger. Oh my God, her book is well cited.
It was those little extra, there's so much in it.
Nuggets.
I'm not using nuggets. I'm trying to think of something else. There's all those little extra spicinesses. What? Going to stick with nuggets. That all that history, which I love because it's just fascinating, but that particularly was really like, I'd never heard of that before. There's so many things that I hadn't heard of before. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. So it's way more, it's like a textbook mixed with a story, mixed with history, mixed with the fascinating history from different eras, from different places in the world. And also then bringing it back to today and what we're doing and why we're doing it. And where it stems from. It just basically, you've written a book, which means we no longer need to do the podcast. So,
yay!
I'm afraid this is it. Thank you for listening and good night.
Thank you and good night. Bring me sunshine.
Every day.
Every day. Bring me sunshine.
All the way.
Way.
Don't know in the this world anymore. Bring me the. Bring me.
Right, we'll have to learn the words for that and put out the record.
So, I think that brings us to the end of this podcast. Not the end, literally, of this podcast. I don't want to jinx it. I want this podcast to carry on. So, don't buy Rachel's book because you won't need to listen to our podcast anymore. I'm not going to tell you where to find it, not linking to it, and I'm just going to put this out as a teaser so you keep listening to the podcast because I'm selfish and I ain't written a book, so you've got to keep listening. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our tour through Rachel's new book, and I just wanted to say a huge thank you to all of you who have been sharing our posts and discussing The Midwife's Cauldron with your friends and everyone else, and all of the 5-star reviews on Apple iTunes. It is quite unbelievable to us, and it really does bring joy to our ears and our eyeballs every time we read them. So thank you, and please, if you have a moment and you haven't already, please pop to iTunes and write a comment. This helps us share the podcast far and wide, and that is what is happening with this tribe. So it is wonderful to have you with us. Please, please enjoy Rachel's book. I am just thrilled that I've been able to read it, and I really know that you will enjoy it as well. So join us for the next episodes that we have coming up. But as always, here's the bloopers. I got dressed up for you to say happy book launch. I put red lipstick on.
I'm not dressed up for you, but thank you.
You got your bra on. Are you having a glass of wine?
Yep. No, it's my perimenopausal whiskey looking concoction of herbal stuff.
Ooh, wow. We're really fucking pushing the boat out for the launch of the book.
With my crystal glass.
I know, spesh.
It's my Christmas present off my children. They got me very posh crystal glasses. So you know how I used to only ever have one wine glass in the house?
Did you?
Well, now I've got wine glasses.
When did that happen?
When I smashed them all and chucked them all out.
I just chucked everything out apart from one. Like, you wrote a story in a story. What's her name? It's Eve. Oh, yeah.
What's her face? You know, what's her face?
You know, that woman you wrote about. It just wove this lush. I just love it. I'm going to start and read it again. Such a brilliant book. I'm so proud of you. Now I'm emotional. Because I am proud of you. And I know how hard you've worked.
Read my tea and toast.
Yeet. I'd love to make you tea and toast now. Just to,
on one of those little national health trays, please.
With the butter in the pack and the jam that's never enough.
And the plastic mug.
Oh, God, and it's brown. It was always a brown thick, with a really thick rim. Do they still have that? If anyone knows of the NHS, do you still have tea and toast with those horrible plastic mugs? Wondering which of my courses is for you? Breastfeeding and Lactation, the Fundamentals has been designed for everyone working in the birthing field or those on their journey to becoming breastfeeding specialists or IBCLCs. This course gives you 7 hours of CPD and is packed with reflective learning, case studies and some pretty tough, at times, quizzes to make sure this stuff sticks. It also means you can meet me monthly in my live Q&A. This is my course that I hope will fill in the gaps that traditional breastfeeding education has left out. I want you completing this, feeling confident to support any breastfeeding or lactation challenge of those in your care. But wait, I have another course called The Feeding Couch. Who's this for? Currently, around 80 to 96% of women decide to breastfeed during their pregnancy, but by just 8 weeks after birth, a third to almost 50% of those women have stopped breastfeeding. And of those women who stopped, 80% say they stopped breastfeeding before they wanted to. Learning about breastfeeding during pregnancy has been shown to improve breastfeeding self-confidence and improve the rate of exclusive breastfeeding in the short and the long term. I believe every mum should be able to choose how she wants to feed her baby and for how long. Knowledge is power. That's why I created the Feeding Couch, designed to be watched during pregnancy or for new mums and parents who may be struggling right now with breastfeeding. The content is in step-by-step, binge-worthy whilst pregnant or for those most tired of days postpartum, totally easy to find exactly what you need and dip in and out when you need a breastfeeding answer quickly. And for you, beautiful podcast listener, there is a 10% discount off both courses when you use the code POD10, that's P-O-D-10, at checkout. To find out more, hop on over to my website, katiejames.site, and have a look at the incredible content waiting for your lucky peepers.